lotteries, which could cover online poker, which could cover online slots and casino. And there's a big, big threat that is thought to maybe even catch up mobile and online sports betting, depending on how you define an internet transaction going interstate versus staying within the borders of a state. So there's a lot that has to be unpacked here, but we saw the attorney generals in New Jersey and Pennsylvania send a very strongly worded letter to the Department of Justice and a Freedom of Information Act request where they're trying to find out more about was Sheldon Adelson and any of his people involved in this.
Adam, great job. We'll talk to you sooner than later, my friend. I appreciate it.
Mr. Cofield, see you soon.
There you go, Adam Candy, filling us in. Make sure you go up to that website. You can find it easily, LegalSportsReport.com or LSR Report on Twitter. All right, Adam Hill is in for the next few hours. We go until 7:30 on Cofield and Companies. We're going to get you ready for UNLV and Boise. It's an 8 o'clock start as we'll do a little more on football recruiting, the crazy culture in NCAA football. We will get into the NBA as the trade deadline approaches, more trades coming down, and we do have to break down what the Sixers did as the Sixers sent a statement to the rest of the Eastern Conference. Man, they want to win this thing.
Battle Born Injury Lawyers presents the Big Five at Five. Number five.
Adam Hill is in. Adam, what's up, buddy?
Not much. How you doing today?
I'm good.
I heard you're
enjoying lovely Boise.
I heard your long rant about how wonderful Boise is.
Actually, it wasn't really a rant either way, but boy, Adam Candy freaking loves Boise. No, I thought it was. I think it's at least where I'm staying. The downtown area is pretty cool. Again, I don't understand it as some unbelievable draw for college football, but yeah, if you have to go to small cities around the country, Boise is not the worst place to go. There's some options to eat and drink. And that's really, for me, I have low standards. That's all that counts.
Well, I know you put words in my mouth and said that I would just say it sucks because everything sucks except for Las Vegas, and you're right.
Yes, I that's why the conversation about Chris Hernandez from Learfield, who runs the UNLV games, going out and seeing animals in the country, I knew you would love that one.
Yeah, I texted you. I was like, what is he doing?
You're like, what?
This is so dumb. Why?
That's what people want to see.
No, they don't.
It's 30 degrees and there's animals close by. That's what they want to do.
What I heard from Adam was much more enticing than what I heard about.
Oh, of course.
What Chris did.
Oh yeah, my biggest worry today. I actually walked around trying to pick somewhere to eat and lamented that I couldn't eat at 15 places.
Well, isn't there has to be a ton of Taco Bells considering it's Taco Bell Arena, right?
Well, I haven't seen one. I don't think they have one in the downtown area. But good attempt at a segue. I'll jump on it. Do they actually serve queso? Can you get queso at some of the fast food Mexican joints?
Well,
like Taco Bell and Del Taco.
It's a delicacy. I mean, so you could get it.
Okay. You know what you're getting if you go to, God bless you, Taco Bell and Del Taco. It might not be the best queso, right? Actually, you know what? I should mention, I did have Taco Bell the other night. I forgot, that's right. I did have Taco Bell the other night, and I had the nacho fries.
No, you
didn't. So let's talk about queso. Yes, I did. Let's talk about queso. Why is there a picture of queso that has just enraged people on the internet?
Well, Dana Perino tweeted out a picture of...
And who is she?
She's a former Republican operative, worked in the White House, now is a Fox News contributor.
I like when you explain these things to the audience.
By the way, I made that up. I mean, I think I know it's true. I'm just spouting her bio just from memory. Did it sound official?
What's that?
Did it sound like correct and official?
It did.
Okay.
I would say did you mention her most important title on her resume would be the former White House press secretary?
Well, I said she worked in the White House.
Okay, well, okay. So specifically, that's what she did.
Right. She conducted the daily briefings.
Okay.
She was not the chef.
So what did she send out that got people just fired up?
Well, she said, I made queso today, and it was a picture of whatever liquid/substance that she concocted in her kitchen.
Yeah.
That ain't
headline
queso.
In the headline in the Fayetteville Observer, this, in quotes in the headline, this queso became the biggest meme of the Super Bowl. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what she was trying to make.
What did she do here?
It looks like something that I would make if I was trying to make anything. Like, I can't cook anything?
Cheap, easy queso is just taking Velveeta and melting it.
Well,
how do you screw that up?
She was apparently going for something much fancier, or I don't know. I don't know what she did. It looked like maybe she did do that, but cooked it for like 7 days.
Right. The color is off.
Yeah, and it actually looks like wow, a solid substance.
She's really getting killed here. She goes, I made queso. One of the first tweets at her from Moe's Southwest Grill. No, you didn't. Okay. Moe's is not happy.
There's a lot of people are making fun of her. I think even Chili's took some shots at her. She called out all the haters. And then she actually called everyone mocking her queso elitist. Like, I don't
really
think that's true.
How could that be possible? What?
I don't know.
Everyone who questioned is an elitist?
Yeah,
what?
Elitist. And
yes, I can say it, elitist.
She said her friends appreciated her cooking prowess, so whatever, dudes.
No, your friends are pansies and won't say it to you that your queso was disgusting.
Would you ever, if you went to a party and somebody made some, you know, slop, whatever this is.
Yeah.
Would you tell them? Would you say anything? I wouldn't.
It depends on the level of friend.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I would. Certain friends. Yes, you would. You have friends you would completely hammer if they made crappy queso. If Mark Moore, one of our promotions guys, had a party and he made crappy queso, of course you would call him out.
First of all, Mark Moore is not
making
it. He's
the god of queso.
We know where he's getting his queso from, and it would be delicious. He wouldn't try to make it.
If he did make it and it fell flat, you would annihilate him.
Only because he has laid claim as being some kind of queso expert.
Well, he's a Tex-Mex guy, so you never know what you're going to get in that case.
That's true. And I don't think he would post that, especially if it looked like whatever this looked like. Like, don't do that.
Yeah. But then get all incredulous, like, you're elitist.
Yeah. You're the one putting yourself out there trying to say, like, look what I made. Well, yeah, we're going to look at it and comment on it.
I'll defend her. All she sent out was, I made queso. I don't think she was, like, pounding her chest that she did it. From the statement, I made queso, I don't know if we can fully understand or we know what the intent was. I don't think she was bragging.
Why else would she put it out there?
I don't know that you're objective on this one.
Unless she was saying...
I think she might be on the wrong side of the aisle for you.
No, it has nothing to do with it. Unless she was saying, like, I made queso, look how bad it turned out, and that was the point of the tweet? Okay. That's fine.
Well, by the look of it, I don't think she understands the way queso is supposed to be made and that it was bad.
I don't think she knows what queso is.
And this is what... By the way, if you want to do food porn on Twitter, then you have to understand much of what you get back is probably going to be hate regardless of whether it was good or not. So you take that risk.
Yeah. And Chili's, by the way, defended her. Said lots of people didn't even attempt to make queso for their guests, but she did. That's a good hostess.
How often do you send out pictures of food? Because I almost never do it because I know inevitably at least 20% of the respondents are going to be, boy, that looks like crap. I actually had two slices of pizza here in Boise. And I was going to send something out like, hey, Boise pizza's not bad. And I was like, forget it. I just don't even want to hear, you know, how crappy the slice looks or, you know, the crust is no good. So I'm out.
I very rarely
I didn't make the pizza. She made the queso. I didn't make the pizza.
I feel like the only times I ever send out pizza or I send out pictures of food is when it's named after me.
That's a good point. And there's so many places that love you that have food named after you. All right, next story.
Number four.
Okay, it's one of the more odd things that we've seen, and we've seen a lot of odd things with these signing days. Hell, from a creative standpoint, Vic Viramontes, the UNLV signee, you know, dressing himself up in more than legendary Vegas garb, right? That was cool.
Vegas
We've seen
Vic?
People do the hat, the different, what's that?
Vegas Vic?
Vegas Vic, yeah. We've seen people do the hat game. Now, there's a punter who just signed from junior college in San Francisco with Miami. He didn't do anything weird. It's just his look. And when you type his name in, the first thing that will come up for this JUCO signee is name and then inquiry on age.
Yeah.
Does anyone know how old? What's the dude's name?
Lewis Headley.
Lewis Headley. And I wrote to you, he looks like Roger, JWoww's former husband.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with Roger and JWoww right now, too.
I know. But I didn't want to break. I don't want to go down that path. A lot of allegations, but
listen,
he's just this giant, tatted yoke dude who Miami just signed to be their punter. How old is he?
First of all, if Roger and JWoww can't make it, I don't know who can. But Lewis Headley, as you said, he is completely covered in tattoos. He's giant.
He's
like
sleeves.
He's like 6'4", 220.
And he looks, what do you think?
He's got an awful mustache. I think he's 38. That's my guess.
You know what's funny is Jared and his goofy laugh. That's a good one. When I first looked at it, I was like, this guy has to be like a former Australian rules dude who's trying to play professional football or wants to take advantage of, you know, Miami for a couple of years. I thought he had to be at least 30 plus for sure.
Do we know? Like, I'm trying to find his. It says he's in his mid 20s. Spent 8 years working as a scaffolder in the Australian desert.
I believe it.
That'll wear down your skin.
I don't think he's in his mid 20s, though. I think he's over 30.
It says large tattooed man in his mid 20s.
Yeah. Well, he has a look.
I mean, is he even that good?
A punt.
He averaged 38 yards a punt last year in junior college. Is that even that good?
No, it's not. Is that it?
Yes. You would think at that age it'd be booming punts. Put some size into it. You got a lot of beef there.
Well, that's the whole point. He's a project. They're going to teach him at 37 years old how to punt.
Do you think he'll? I mean, they could probably line him up and use him as a fullback every now and then too.
Something. Get some use out of him.
I mean, he looks like
38 yards a punt.
He looks
ain't going to cut it.
Bam Bam Bigelow.
Top three stories.
Number three.
So you saw the stories emerge that Art Briles was going to interview for a position at Southern Miss, right?
Yes.
Which is so beyond horrendous. Who tweeted this out? Oh, it was Stuart Mandel, who's a longtime college football writer, said of the interview, question one, Coach, how do you explain 31 of your players being accused of committing 52 sexual assaults, including 5 gang rapes? And then he says, oh, right, you can't. End of interview. Why was Southern Miss talking to Art Briles? Why would anyone give Art Briles? Again, listen to those numbers. Baylor is sexual assault university. That's the culture that he allowed to go on. And in fact, when more of the information came out, he was part of the cover-up. Art Briles, 31 players were accused of committing 52 sexual assaults, including 5 gang rapes.
Yeah,
why would anyone hire him?
Yeah, but how's his offense?
You can find someone else to coach in your program.
I would agree with you, but you know why people are doing it. First of all, you can cite religion, and that fixes everything somehow.
Well, I'm going to read you something here in a second, which I think is completely gross, and this is why this combination of the manic nature of wanting to win in the South at football and God squatting is really, really damn. I'll just read it now. So Jay Hobson, who's a Southern Miss head coach, disagrees with, and we didn't tell you that Southern Miss said, no, we're not doing Art Briles. Okay, so let's move on.
I think, Steve, that's the most interesting part of this whole thing, that yes, a school interview, actually a head coach interviewed him, Jay Hobson,
right,
interviewed him because he wanted to hire him. The school stepped in and said absolutely not, and now the school and the coach are publicly going head to head about the school not hiring Art Briles, who, by the way, again, 31 players sexual assaults while he was at Baylor, and he helped cover them up.
Yep. The coach said, although I respect the decision of Dr. Rodney Bennett, I disagree with it. I am so grateful for the grace and forgiveness God gives me, which allows me to inherit his kingdom, which I do not deserve. What does this have to do with Art Briles?
I don't know.
He says, I believe he's a man who deserves a second chance. He's a man that seems sincere and humble in his interview and personally committed. Now, here we go. The excuses. Personally, I'll read it again. Personally, he committed a crime. And that's enough for you. That he wasn't actually doing the assaulting and raping.
Well, I think it gets even worse.
God.
I think the statement gets worse because he then says,
However, I believe he's a man who does love the Lord and deserves a second chance. God. I understand both sides have opinions. This is just mine. Well, what other side is there?
Well, no, he also pointed out, he basically said that Art Briles, he was guilty of not reporting the acts at Baylor, but when he's here, he's just an assistant, and all the reporting things are my job. Like, I'll take care of that.
He may not have acted in proper protocol. That's what it's always protocol when this happens.
Yeah.
He didn't report it up the chain. No, he did more than that. He had a fixer in the program, and he was often engaging with the fixer on what decision to make and how to fix situations and if they could be fixed. This isn't a protocol deal. My God.
Well, I do.
Unintended.
I am very often intrigued by whether is religion a crutch or an excuse in these cases, or is it at fault? Like, I think it's, I don't know. Our guys, are you so involved and wrapped up in your religion that you just believe that, listen, what he did can only be judged by God, so I'm not in a position to judge him. I'm just a football coach, and I want to win games, so I'm going to hire him as a football coach. And in the end, it's not my job to judge him. It's God's. And that's what your religion teaches you. And okay. Or is it just, hey, I have a convenient excuse here, I'm just going to say it's religion? I don't know which one it is. Both are very dangerous. Both are frightening.
You think?
Yeah.
What do you think it was like for women on the campus of Baylor?
Yeah, no kidding.
When this dude is like, it's not for me to judge what's going on. God will. Or I can do anything I want because I'll always get a second chance. It's all about forgiveness. All right, Art.
Yeah. And it, to go way off the rails, it kind of ties into the documentary that I'm obsessed with, and I know that you've watched and we'll talk about at some point.
Yep.
But when you're so wrapped up in your religious beliefs and it blinds you from seeing anything else, like, it's very dangerous. And it's not, I'm sure it sounds like a slam on religion. It's not. It's just, you can't allow it to run every decision. You can't allow it to run your life in that way.
Super dangerous. And at Baylor, it was completely out of control. And now you've got this culture of winning at football, man. People are just freaking blinded. And then, you know, this coach, in this case, bringing in the Lord, and, you know, it's for him to judge. Apparently not, because Art Briles ain't going to be coaching at Southern Miss. Top two stories.
Number two.
All right, Adam, so what's happening with Anthony Davis? So he's going to sit, and we're going to see what happens here up until tomorrow afternoon when the NBA trade deadline is final. What do you think is going to happen with Anthony Davis? Are they going to pull the trigger or not?
I mean, I feel like at this point they're waiting. Like, I feel like they're going to wait till the offseason, which is crazy
waiting
to me.
Waiting until the deadline or waiting till the offseason?
No, till the offseason, which seems crazy. I mean, you're scared of him getting hurt and you're sitting him. Are you just going to sit him the rest of the year? Maybe they are.
Right.
And what are the legal ramifications of doing that? Can they? I honestly don't know the answer to that. Under the CBA, can you just say, tell a player? Like, I get it, for a day or two, a player's not going to fight it. But if you just say, hey, right, you're too valuable to us, you're sitting out the rest of the year, can they do that? I mean, I guess they could.
What can the NBA do in response?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a very fascinating question.
Yeah, we're gonna have more on the Lakers and especially more on the Vegas Golden Knights after 6, as Bischoff is in with Adam. They're going to carry up until 7:30. Here's our top story in our Big Five.
Number one.
Sixers make a deal. Wow. Sixers get, this was late last night, Sixers get Tobias Harris, Boban, Mike Scott, for several picks, and we'll say Landry Shamet, and then some roster fillers. What do you think about what the Sixers are doing?
Well, I mean, they're officially going all in. We know that. I mean, that's pretty clear that you're making a move for Tobias Harris.
Already got
Harris.
Jimmy Butler.
Yeah?
Yep, already got Jimmy Butler.
Already have a bunch of guys that, you know, that you locked in as your core, and then now you're adding pieces like, you know, Tobias Harris, who for some reason is going to be a max guy. I don't really understand why, but he will. And you're adding him, and you're giving up pieces. And you said it was kind of, you know, roster, you know, pieces there. But, I mean, those are guys that were contributing. It's guys that were playing, that were a part of the team and giving them minutes. So, you know, you are kind of emptying your bench and you're going all in on a starting lineup here that you think can right. compete and get you to the finals.
I guess my question is, and this has been the question about Philly and their roster they're building since the middle of last year, while the rest of the league is going small, why do the Sixers keep going bigger?
I don't know.
I don't get it. So the starting five will now be Ben Simmons, who really isn't a point guard. He's a good player, and he's a good distributor, and his game is multifaceted, but he can't shoot beyond 15 feet. Ben Simmons, J.J. Redick, 6'7 Jimmy Butler, 6'8 Tobias Harris, and Joel Embiid.
Yeah, they're huge.
Are they going to just out-big other teams? Is this going to work?
I mean, I think that they've got
and how
sort
does,
of...
If they got the,
they've got sort of the right mix to make it happen, and that they've got size, but they've got size that, you know, can actually play different positions, and, you know, you've got a guy like Ben Simmons who can play point guard. Yeah, I think the roster is good. The starting five is really good. I don't know that the pieces mix perfectly with who they have out there, but they've got enough right. talent to compete with teams like Toronto and Milwaukee to try to make a run at the finals, and that's where you want to be right now. The problem is, what happens in the offseason? Who do you get to keep around? Yeah. I mean, if you're losing Butler and Harris, you've still got a good core, and you can bring guys in, but you've given up a lot of the, you know, complimentary players that have helped you get to this point. So it's a risk, and they're kind of yeah. pushing other chips in.
I got cut off before. I don't know what got out and what got cut off there. I don't understand how they're the one organization that keeps going bigger, doesn't have a true point guard, and if they do make the finals with a lineup of Simmons, Redick, Butler, Harris, and Embiid, how are they going to try to defend the Golden State Warriors?
I don't know.
With
zone?
No guards.
Zone?
I mean, J.J. Redick's a guard, but, I mean, he's, right? You're not zoning. I mean, that's ridiculous. You're not zoning Golden State. I don't know. I don't understand it. I guess they certainly have lots of scoring options.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
the plan.
You know, Harris at least fills the hole that, you know, is gaping with Ben Simmons on the floor where he can't shoot beyond 15. Is a, you know, 43% from three, but it's just weird what they're doing. Really weird.
Yeah, and by the way, like, Muscala and Landry Shamet started last night. I mean, these are guys that are important players to them that they're shipping out. So, you know,
they're hoping Mike Scott's going to fill the role of Muscala. The reason I mentioned Shamet and picks is Shamet's more of a future guy, even though he's getting playing time now. I mean, here's the bottom line. The Sixers need Markelle Fultz to come back and contribute for 20 minutes a night, or they need to spin him to someone else and get someone else on the roster who can help them at the guard position.
They're shopping him right now.
Because that's killing him.
Yeah, they're shopping him. I just don't know.
That's killing him, because that guy was supposed to be the point guard, and they still don't have a point guard.
Well, I don't know what they're going to get for him. I mean, they're trying. The reports are that they're looking, seeing what they could try to get for him, but what are they possibly going to get for a guy who's broken?
Right.
I mean, I guess you still hope there's potential there somewhere, but he's completely broken.
Yeah.
So good luck.
That's the way they've chosen to build the team. All right, on the way back, we, as I promised, we're going to get to Vegas Golden Knights last night and the big dramatic victory against Tampa. That'll come up in about 35 minutes. We're going to talk a little baseball, also talk a little UNLV baseball as local Josh Towers, who works around UNLV baseball and, of course, played in the majors, is going to join Cofield and Company.
Follow the Cofield and Company crew around Sin City on Instagram at ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Back here, Cofield and Company. On this Wednesday, Steve Cofield up in Boise. He is headed over to Taco Bell Arena. You can check him out on the broadcast coming up later this evening. 8 o'clock is the tip. UNLV at Boise State. Rebels on the road. And you can check it out right here. John and Robert coming up at 7:30 to get you ready for tip-off at 8. And you'll hear Steve Cofield bringing you all the insights of what is going on during the game from over on the sideline. And the best part of that is that as you're watching the game, you can try to find Steve Cofield hanging out there, out and about on the sidelines, looking for spots to give his reports. later on this evening. Well, we are getting set to talk to Josh Towers, former Major League Baseball pitcher, in just a minute. And wanted to one more time talk to you guys about the first pitch dinner over at the with the UNLV baseball team Thursday night. That is tomorrow over at the Strip View Pavilion at the Thomas and Mack Center. Fans, family, friends. That's very complicated there. A lot of F words. Fans, family, friends, alumni, everyone welcome out to that first pitch dinner over at the Thomas and Mack. $100 for an individual. That is a steal to go hang out with the team and everybody around it. And the $1,000 Rebel Table. That's the way to go. Eight seats, and you'll be joined by two current players. And, of course, we talked to Greg Maddux yesterday. He'll be doing that keynote speech, although he said it's more of a Q&A. So if you go out there, have some questions ready, make sure you ask him about the best pranks of his career, because he said he couldn't talk about it on the radio. Maybe he'll talk about it at that dinner. But it is former Major League Baseball Pitchers Week here on the show. So we talked to Greg yesterday. Let's bring in Josh Towers right now. Josh, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I am good. You know, we're talking about this UNLV baseball team getting ready for another season. A lot of promise, a lot of optimism around the team. And I know it's something that you, you know, you've been around. So what are your thoughts on the team this year?
Listen, yeah, I haven't got to be around these guys as much as I'd like this year because I've been helping out at Liberty a lot with the high school.
Okay.
But that's not to say that I don't know much about it. Dude, this team's good. This team's really good. And obviously, we got some great players. Everybody knows about Bryson Stott in this area. And I think it's important to talk about him because and I think this is important as well when you think about this from this side of it, how good the coaching staff has been. Bryson Stott came, you know, from DO to UNLV a couple of years back, and he had a phenomenal year. And he got put on the map with all the professional scouts, all the other stuff that you get to do on the amateur side. And then a lot of times that stuff goes to our head, and he got better the next year, and he worked harder. And now he's showing up for his junior year, which could be the coolest year of his life, draft year, potential first-round pick, and he's working harder, and he seems to be more humble. And I think that's important because, to me, that tells a great story about how good Stan Stolte's been and Greg Maddux has been and the rest of the coaching staff, and I love it. And there's so many players like that. I mean, we saw last year, Kyle Isbell took himself from almost not even being on a map to, I think it was a second or third round pick. So, listen, they're doing such good things over there at UNLV. I'm a huge fan of head coach Stan Stolte. And then anytime you get to have, I mean, Greg Maddux around, the greatest pitcher of maybe of all time, but definitely of our generation, it's exciting.
How difficult of a situation is that to be in for a player who has worked his whole life? And if he could be drafted today, he would be, you know, a first-round draft pick. He'd be, you know, heading off and getting ready to start his professional career and working toward Major League Baseball. But instead, he's got to prove it once again now. He's got another season to do it. There's a lot of pressure hanging over you. How difficult of a spot is that?
Very difficult. Good question, too, by the way. Very difficult because we put pressure. See, a lot of what we think as amateurs is we think that it's stat and stat-driven. So we go out there and try to hit 20 homers, and we try to hit 400, and we don't really – that's not necessarily the end goal. These guys, the reason they follow us for 2 and 3 years is they want to see consistency in us. Do I run the ball out every time I hit the ball, or is it just when I'm going well? They want to see. I can't see every throw in a game, so maybe Bryson only gets 4 plays this game. And what throws were they? Were they deep in the hole? Did he have to charge? Was it going up the middle? Was it just routine plays? These guys are evaluating arm strength, obviously velocity on pitchers. They're evaluating their times to first base and their times to second. They're looking at so many things, and they're looking for consistency. And when they find these guys that have these 4 and 5 tools, obviously they get put higher up on that draft board. When they find the pitchers that, you know, they might throw 94 in the first, but by the seventh inning they're throwing 89, you know, they're like, okay, that raises a red flag. So they start to follow these guys, and they start to evaluate based on the tools that we know we need, and if it's just a good weekend or if it's just a good year or if it's a good 2 or 3 years. And so, you know, as an amateur player, it's so hard for us to understand that. We want to go 4 for 4. If I go 1 for 4 with a single, I feel like I failed them, and, oh, man, they might not like me. And so as coaches, it becomes their responsibility and our responsibility to, you know, teach these guys to be just great young men. hustle. That's why hustling and effort is the number one thing you ever hear from coaches, because, you know, once you have that, you know, you're teachable. And so as a player, the pressure that we put on ourselves, it mounts up, man. It gets tough.
Where's the line on the hustling, though? Because, I remember following Bryce so much and, you know, all the way from high school. And I'm talking about Bryce Harper, of course. Following all the way through high school. And then at junior college, I was around that team for that, you know, pretty much that whole season. He was there. And then going up to the major leagues, and it was almost like he was criticized for the hustle level, where it was like to a point of being obnoxious. So is that a danger? Is that a real thing, or is that just something that was made up?
So are you saying as far as he was hustling too much and it was like, seriously slow down or stop showing off?
Yes.
Okay, so that becomes very difficult too. I mean, I'm telling you, the amateur world and kids can be so cruel. And we're talking about junior high school, college, it doesn't matter. Even in professional baseball early, listen, it's very difficult. You know, you're asked to hustle, and that's the one thing. You don't have to have any talent to give effort. You don't have to have any talent to hustle, right? So you're asked to give to hustle, but then maybe in high school or in college, you're overly hustling, and that's just who you are, and you're doing it at practice. And one of your teammates is like, come on, dude, you're showing us up. Why are you always going to do that? Just right. Practice. But it's just who I am. But then again, if I'm not willing to give effort, then I'm not really, you know, willing to be the person that I say I want to be. And so you have to be willing to do that and take criticism from your friends, from your peers, from your teammates, and it's not a fair thing. And that becomes probably the hardest part, because then one of your teammates kind of rags you a little bit, or he's kind of serious because he doesn't want to hustle, then maybe you stop hustling, and then you look bad. But you got to remember, like I tell these kids, you know, like some of these kids aren't going to go on past high school. They aren't going to go on past college, and you do. So we're talking about two different perspectives here. And are you going to give somebody in the stands who you don't know is there a reason to not want to come see you just because somebody gave you a hard time for hustling at practice or hustling too much? Listen, the end result, Bryce Harper's about to get $300+ million, and I know he's more talented than all of us in baseball. Sometimes there just is a reward to working your butt off, and you got a real job too. You know how hard it is, and so I'm telling you, you know, you worked your butt off to get where you're at, and it's worth it to take that criticism. It's just hard for these kids, you know, when they're buddies are talking a little bit of smack to him.
Yeah, there you go. Josh Towers, former big leaguer. You can see him all around town now and doing some radio, certainly some sports talk, some betting talk as well here in town for sure, and talking about a variety of issues. And Josh, I did want to get into do it with you about the proposed rule changes in Major League Baseball that are out there right now. They're talking about universal DH. They're talking about a potential of pitchers must face a minimum of 3 batters and other things. What are your thoughts on some of the things they're trying to do to the game right now?
Ooh, I got fired up last night, early this morning.
I know you did.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I haven't even really gone on Twitter and destroyed anybody yet. Listen, the DH thing, it's been talked about for, what, the past 3 decades. I mean, ever since it's been a split, they've always talked about it. I don't necessarily mind it. It changes the game. I've always said you can't compare generational stats. So no matter what they've done in the past, you can't compare anything anymore. I don't like the fact that it's just another way of helping the offense. You know, baseball's trying to – they're just trying to make it offensive-friendly. They think that's what fans want, and so every rule change is about the offense. And, you know, every now and again, facing a pitcher instead of a DH is a pretty cool thing for us. But, listen, I get it. I understand, and I'm not so mad at it. It is going to dumb down the game of baseball a lot, though. You know, there's no more double moves, there's no more pitching just premeditated. It becomes very easy to manage in the American League if you want to know the truth. And so I think it takes out some of the – I would rather see it go the other way if you want to know the truth. I think it makes baseball a little bit smarter of and a harder thing to do is strategize. The other things, brother, you're going to ask a reliever to come in and have to face 3 hitters minimum. I mean, you flat out just can't do this. Like, okay, so what if I'm a lefty and there's 2 lefties and a righty coming up? And so I'm brought in to face those guys, and now the manager on the other team, the offense, does he get to switch and does he get to make a lineup change? So he gets to take out one of the lefties and put a righty. And so if I'm forced to face 3, he should be forced to have to leave his lineup in the way it is. And so if he moves a guy, do I now get to move a guy? And so there's so many different things that are going to factor in. What if I go out there as a reliever and I give up a double and a double and I clearly don't have it? I'm forced to leave that guy on the mound just because the rule says he has to face 3 batters. And so now you put me in a position to lose this game because of what? Because we're trying to speed up the game of baseball. I don't know who's asking for the game to be sped up, but my games when I pitched used to be somewhere around 2 hours and 10 minutes. So I could teach Major League Baseball a thing or two about how to, you know, how to speed the pace of play up without rules that are just, I don't know. I don't even know what to call these rules. They're crazy. It doesn't work to say that somebody has to face three batters because there's too many things that you can come back with. And now we're talking about the outcome of baseball games. We're talking about people's jobs, people's livelihood, and for what? To speed it up 5 seconds? I mean, they added instant replay, and that extended the life of a game. And it's just they do so many things, and once again, this goes back to it's always benefiting the hitters, and I can't understand why. Like I told them, you know, there's give and take on some things. Like, we'll give a little bit, but you got to be realistic. I mean, you're talking about adding a DH now. You're talking about I have to face three hitters no matter what. You're talking about 20-second shot clock to throw a pitch on. You're talking about lowering it from 6 to 5 visits. So these guys get to look at their iPads on the on-deck circle of a game on the field while they're getting ready to face me. But I have 20 seconds to remember everything I did to him, the game plan, what he did his last at bat, the situation of the game now. I can't talk to anybody because that's considered a mound visit, so we're not going to do that. And, I mean, it's just all the other rules that are coming to play. It's like, wait, hold on a second. So what are we doing here? And I don't think Major League Baseball really truly understands. Like I said, you know, you want to speed it up, take the hitter's walkout songs out because that'll speed up about 5 seconds to 10 seconds per at bat. You want to speed it up? Tell the third base coach you can only give signs one time before the at-bat starts, so now the hitter has to stay in the box and the runner doesn't go back to first base and wait every time. You only get one time before the at-bat, and that's it. And let's see how they like some of those. And I'll tell you, dude, I know I'm getting long-winded.
No,
as
good.
As negative of a thing as now you're trying to tell me I have 20 seconds to throw a pitch, well, that 20 seconds does count the hitter stepping out of the box and looking to get signs. It does count all that stuff. 20 seconds is not a long time for me to process everything that I'm trying to process in a game of baseball when I'm facing Mike Trout and Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. It's already difficult enough as it is. The one thing that they don't understand and they're not thinking about is you got to remember, last year was the worst hitting year in the history of baseball. It was the best pitching year ever. Least amount of hits, most strikeouts ever. All these things that they're doing haven't sped up the pace of play. And it has not helped the offense. The offense has gotten worse, and pitching has gotten better, although, you know, the pitchers gave a little bit back towards the end of the year last year. We used to do a thing with the Baltimore Orioles called the 12-second rule. Sid Thrift implemented this when we were kids coming up through the organization. If I threw a pitch and got a desired result, if I threw the same pitch within 12 seconds, 95% chance I'm going to get the same result. So they would make us do this 12-second rule. So we were taught to work fast. Hence why our games would go so fast compared to others. And Major League Baseball doesn't understand that. Although 20 seconds is a very hard thing to tell somebody to do, if I am able to throw my pitches within 20 seconds, hitters get rushed. They don't have time to process. Slow games benefit hitters. Fast games benefit pitchers and defense. My pitchers are, or my defense is going to be on their toes. If I throw a pitch within 20 seconds, my rhythm, my timing's better. Hitters are going to get worse. Their averages are going to get worse. They're going to be rushed. And they're going to hate that. It's actually going to work as a negative, and they don't understand that. So going back to all these different proposed rule changes, I saw some more that were pretty crazy. I just think that they really need to stop rushing this and stop making these things rash, because there's a much better way to do it. And the last thing is, like I told them, I would throw my 8 warm-up pitches, and then I would look around or look back to the umpire, because the umpire at second base controls the clock for commercials, and he would always hold his hand up and tell me to wait. And I'd be like, give him my hand back, like, how long? And he goes, 2:20. We have to wait 2 minutes and 20 seconds between innings for commercials. So I would have to sit there on the mound for 30 or 40 seconds waiting, because I'm only allowed 8, so I wasn't allowed to throw any more pitches. So you had to sit there and wait for them to come back from commercial. So that's the other thing. If you want to speed the game up, take out one commercial per inning break, and I guarantee the game will be faster. God forbid they lose a couple bucks, huh?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you don't have any passion about that or don't care about that at all. So that's interesting.
Right.
Josh Towers, you can follow him up on Twitter at No Don't Josh. Where did that Twitter handle come from?
All right. So for a long time, I didn't want social media. And you watch athletes every day post stuff on Twitter, and then they have to come back and apologize and erase it. And they usually get fined or suspended because, we end up having too many drinks or whatever, and we say something we shouldn't say. And so I never wanted Twitter, but the boys at VEASAN talked me into it. So I thought, all right, I'm going to put no, don't Josh, meaning when I get ready to send something, no, don't Josh, don't send it because you know you're going to get in trouble. And I still happen to send it.
There you go. That is good stuff. Well, I was looking at your Twitter, and you tweeted about something, or at least I think you retweeted something, that we've been really going hard on the last couple of days. Julian Edelman all of a sudden is considered now a potential Hall of Famer, which is ridiculous. But at the same time, wasn't he suspended for PEDs this year? Like, Barry Bonds can't get in. He was never actually suspended.
Isn't it crazy? So I said this. I did retweet that. Somebody had it. Listen, Julian Edelman's a great player, and he fits the system well. And all successful teams have some sort of slot receiver. Cooper Kupp is one of the more famous ones. He's coming up now, and it's a popular thing with the Rams. It is a great position. He does a great job, and I don't question Julian Edelman's work ethic at all. This guy's amazing. He's not a Hall of Fame player by any means yet. And that's my other thing. You can't count postseason stats, by the way, towards a Hall of Fame vote because not everybody gets in the postseason. That's a team thing. So let's go ahead and eliminate that right now. Julian Edelman's not a Hall of Fame player yet. If he does this for a few more years, then now, yeah, we can talk about it. But I don't understand the line between football and baseball. I know in baseball, post-2002, if you test positive for steroids or PEDs, you're not going to make the Hall of Fame because you cheated. Now, remember, we didn't have this rule pre-02. Steroids were not illegal in baseball. So anybody who took anything pre-02 to the beginning of time, it was fine. It wasn't a negative thing. There was no rule. It was okay. So we can't hold that against anybody in the past. But now that it's a rule, you can't. So I guess football doesn't follow the same guidelines because we're talking about a lot of different guys who've been suspended here or there four games. Guys, it's such a common occurrence nowadays. I don't think we think much about it. But this man was suspended this year for PEDs, performance-enhancing steroids, and now we're talking about putting him in the Hall of Fame. It's not my vote. I don't really care. I like good athletes and good players, but I don't understand where the line's drawn if that's the case. And listen, Barry Bonds, accuse him, say whatever you want, link him to whatever you want to link him. The man never tested positive. Roger Clemens never tested positive. And anybody on that list from 2002, it doesn't matter. Because Major League Baseball came in our locker rooms in 2001 and said, listen, we're going to start testing for steroids. You guys, anybody who's on them, you might want to start getting off them now because there's a certain percentage in 2002 that if over this much test positive, we're going to test forever. If under this much test positive, we're never testing again. And as a league, we couldn't stay off it, so now the testing is implemented and it's forever. So that was on us. But once again, it wasn't illegal during that. So anybody who was on that list from 02, it wasn't illegal to take it. Anybody, McGuire was taking something and they said, hey, you can't take it anymore. And Mark McGuire said, okay, I'll stop taking it. Now we're going to hold that against Mark McGuire for doing something that was not illegal when he did it? That's not fair. So Barry Bonds, from what I understand, never tested positive for steroids. He should be in the Hall of Fame as the greatest player to ever play the game.
Josh, we're going to let you get out of here. You've given us a lot of great stuff. But I just want the other thing, and I want to run this by you because you were around and you've been talking about it already. My whole thing is when you start making those decisions, like the media has decided Barry Bonds is not in. They've decided that Roger Clemens is not in based on their suspicion. My belief is there's plenty of guys that were never accused and the media wouldn't know it. Plenty of them that we're putting in the Hall of Fame that were probably doing something. How are we just making up our own mind who was guilty and who wasn't?
Well, that's my problem. I'll try to make this quick, but that's my problem. Somebody posted on social media, it was Hank Aaron's birthday, and they said something about Hank Aaron and all his stats and the Hall of Famer, and they said he never took steroids. And I said, how do you know?
Yeah.
How do you know he never took it? We didn't test Hank Aaron. Nobody tested him. How do you know what he did take and what he didn't take? We have no way to prove this. So that's a false statement. You really don't know what he took, and I'm not accusing Hank Aaron of anything. All I'm saying is I have coaches who played back in the day who told me about a lot of different things that they used to take. That's fine, but we can't start accusing people of something when we don't know. It was anonymous. He didn't want his name out, but somebody who has, and it came out this offseason recently because of the votes for Roy Halladay and everybody got in the Hall of Fame. This person said, who has a vote for the Hall of Fame, he will not vote for this particular player because when he was a writer, that player didn't treat him well, and he doesn't like him, so he will not vote for him.
Okay.
This person has a vote for somebody to go in the Hall of Fame, and he gets to say this? That should be revoked immediately. And I'm not saying that's everybody, but that's for one particular person who has a vote. I think that's as wrong as it gets, and I think they need to reevaluate who has votes and how they vote.
Great, great stuff, Josh Towers, as always. We appreciate it, man, and follow him up on Twitter. Even if there's no chance he's going to say something crazy because it reminds him right in his Twitter handle, but follow him anyway, and we really appreciate it, man.
You guys are awesome. Thank you.
There you go. No, don't, Josh. Follow him up on Twitter. That is the voice of Josh Towers, former Major League Baseball pitcher. And as he said, you can hear him around town, certainly talking about sports in other locations. We will continue when we come back. Tyler Bischoff on his way in about 10 minutes, leading you up to UNLV Boise State tonight on an extended edition of Cofield.